Today I'm going to talk about scaling the creation of on-brand content. So do most people know who Shutterstock is? Yeah, show of hands. So just as the marketing guy, I can do a quick gated recall. Good, good. And what would you know Shutterstock for? Stock photography, yeah. So we're well known for our stock platform and the hundreds of millions of images that we have in there, images, videos, vectors, all of that kind of stuff. I'm going to talk about something a little bit different, which is on-brand content, which is something that we've been doing as well. And really, as you think about scaling content production, on-brand content plus stock content, it kind of provides an opportunity for people to be able to create content faster, better, cheaper. I came into Shutterstock through an acquisition of a company called Flashstock that Shutterstock made about a year ago. It's a good acquisition because I'm still here, and I'm now running enterprise marketing for all of Shutterstock. So what we created with Flashstock was really something to address the need that marketers were having around being able to create lots of content for social and digital channels. And a lot of people were just struggling with that ability to create more content, to get stuff into market faster, using the traditional production processes that they were using with agencies or other partners or that kind of stuff. So it was a challenge that was really kind of ripe in the marketplace. So what I'm going to talk about, some of the brands that we're working with, some examples of what they're doing, how some of the best practices and what we're learning through working with these guys, and then just some of the things that we're doing at Shutterstock as marketers, and give you a couple examples of that as well. Before I get started, I just want to talk a little bit about like content. I'm super passionate about the content space. I've been in marketing for 15 years, so I've seen a lot of change. I started my career in around 97, 98 and sold the first banner ad to an internet company, which was kind of ironic. So in the content space, it's always been changing, but really the way that we produce content hasn't changed. And the way that we've kind of worked in terms of this linear process of like a brief and an agency and tossing things over the fence and taking 8 weeks, 8 months to get stuff done. It just doesn't scale in today's economy. I call myself a reformed brand marketer, mainly because I've spent hundreds of millions of dollars pushing messages at people, and it had its place in time. It really worked well. I knew that I could drive campaign efficiency scores if I hit a certain GRP amount, but things are just fundamentally different now. I've got a great focus group of two back in my house in Toronto. I have a kid who's 8 and 6, or two kids, one's 8, one's 6, two boys at home. And when I watch their media consumption, it terrifies me as a marketer. So I cut cable. I worked for a cable company, but I cut cable, didn't want to give them money anymore. I have an over-the-air antenna, a big internet package, and all of our stuff we do is streaming. And so there are three channels of choice is YouTube, games and Netflix in that priority. And so when you watch their consumption patterns and how they're interacting, on YouTube, they get exposed to some pre-roll and mid-roll ads. In-game, they get a lot of in-game advertising and interstitials and that kind of stuff. And then on Netflix, there's no ads yet. And when you see how they react, they have this Pavlovian reflex, like when they're on YouTube, it's like skip, 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 when anything comes up. And they're just like, get by this thing, or they just totally tune out. And then on the in-game ad stuff, it's the same thing where they're hitting that X button. But that's it, like that's all of the advertising they're exposed to. And in fact, when I like do something like turn on the TV, that's like punishment. They're like, what's this thing? It's like on TV and I have to watch through this and I can't touch that screen and get rid of that commercial and swipe it away. So like when I'm looking at this, I'm like, oh God, because the majority of the ads that they're actually exposed to on YouTube are linked to my profile. So they're getting like lots of insurance ads and home improvement stuff. And so it's like, they're going to be well versed in like planning for their retirement. But other than that, the only thing they really see that's actually suited to them is in-game ads. So as we're trying to like reach people and do things differently and figure out how we're going to go after like kind of the next generation of consumers, it's going to be vastly different in terms of how this go-to-market strategy is going to actually work. So today I'm going to talk about, I'll start off with three factors that we're seeing kind of stressing the internal systems. And so really there's a couple of key things. One is explosion of mobile. Second is this digital duopoly, and that's really around Facebook and Google. And then the third is this notion of individuality at scale, and I'll talk a little bit about that. So in terms of mobile and how mobile has grown, so people are checking their phones 150 times a day now. And I think on average, it's like we're spending 3.5 hours on our devices. When we're on our devices, we're in apps. We're going into Facebook and Snapchat and YouTube and Instagram and LinkedIn and going into all these places. And so when you think about like what we're doing in our devices and the type of content that we're consuming, it's always in the formats that the app providers are creating. So, you know, Facebook will say, we're logging into Facebook about 14.4 times a day. And in any given session, a user will scroll the length of the Empire State Building. So when you think about that and all the things that they're scrolling through, like our share of voice now is not really competing with competitors, but it's competing with baby pictures and news and fake news and all of the people that are paying to get exposed to that person within that news feed. And just the way bidding systems work and stuff like that, there's always going to be someone that will probably outbid you. And we're also competing with the algorithms and the algorithm changes in terms of making sure that we're driving up and creating the most engaging content for that specific person at that time in that news feed based on where they happen to be sitting that day. So it's really kind of posing this problem or this challenge that we really need to start to think about content within those different channels and how do we create content specific and specifically tuned to be able to drive up the most engagement within those channels as well. And of course, because we're on our phone so much, that's really kind of contributed to this rise of mobile. So I worked in the telco space. I worked at a wireless company for about 5 years in the mid-2000s. So I was there during the feature phone era and then the post-iPhone era. So we launched the iPhone right in the middle of my tenure there. And every year that I worked there, we were always talking about, this year is the year of mobile, and it was going to take off. And we finally kind of got there. Like after 10 years, it's connectivity and the size of devices has really made it easier to consume content. We used to be like, nobody's going to watch like a full-length TV show on their little tiny phone, but things have obviously changed if you go on the train or the subway. So I'm not going to throw a bunch of stats up about like how mobile's like increased and all that kind of stuff, but does anybody know what the number one YouTube video is right now? I'll give you a hint. It's in the screen. Or you could check Wikipedia really quickly. It's Despacito. And Despacito has 5.24 billion views, and it came out in January of 2017, so about a year and a half ago. The next couple of videos, See You Again, Shape of You, and Gangnam Style. So it's all videos, and like music videos are always what drives like a ton of activity. Weirdly, like number five is Masha and the Bear, so if anybody has kids, it's like a weird Russian thing that I don't really get, but it does really well. But the thing to think about here is like that it's not about like, oh, well, it's Despacito. It's like Justin Bieber, it's horrible. And I apologize about that as a proud Canadian. Our worst exports are to the U.S. It's not softwood lumber, it's our music talent. Nickelback, Celine Dion, Justin Bieber, sorry about that. But here, like the crazy thing is, like, so we're almost getting to the world's population has all watched Despacito. And at the rate, like when Gangnam Style came out, like you couldn't turn on CNN or any show without seeing him giving an interview and all this kind of stuff. And it was like, oh my God, we can't believe how crazy this video has actually gone. But now things are actually moving at such a crazy pace. What we need to think about as marketers is like, so things are moving that much faster and consumption is increasing that much more. All of our video assets, all of the ads that we're going to be creating and stuff, they're going to get wear out really, really quickly. So before we used to be like, oh, let's do a 6-week campaign and throw it up and it's like, ooh, in broadcast and we're done. That just doesn't exist anymore. And so when we think about the average cost of a 30-second spot in the US being $344K, that just really doesn't scale. So as we're trying to rethink this whole like video production process, we really need to think about how do we take 344K to about 34 or 3.5K per video. In terms of this digital duopoly, so Google and Facebook represent the lion's share in terms of advertising revenue, and where marketers are going to try to reach audiences. So, you know, 60% of digital ad revenues go to these guys, and about 20% of digital ad dollars are spent on Facebook. It's remarkable. But the thing that's like really interesting about what they've provided is through these platforms, you can now be able to access customers in a mass way and launch brands unlike you've been able to do ever before. So before, where mass media and being able to launch a brand globally really was reserved to the people who had the budgets to be able to afford global distribution or national TV campaigns or those types of things, you can now launch a brand and be able to scale it up pretty quickly, pretty fast. Before I joined Flashstock, I was doing some consulting, and I was working for a company in Canada called Endy Mattress. So Endy came out at the exact same time Casper did, basically just copied the entire model, found a vendor in Canada, and just tried to create a beachhead. So I worked with them on their overall kind of strategy on how we're going to launch a company and what we're going to do. So the company within 12 months was doing $30 million in revenue. 15 people were employed at the company. It was cash flow positive. And a third of the revenue was invested back into marketing. So, and that was just in Canada. Like, so $30 million is like, it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, in US standards, you had a zero to everything. You always scale it up by 10% in Canadian standards. So you think about how you're able to actually build a company at a very niche audience or around a niche product. And anybody can do it. And that's what's really like putting these stresses on the packaged goods companies. So that's how like Dollar Shave Club and all these other kind of like small cosmetic brands and things like that are able to build such massive followings, because they can get really targeted and really segmented really quickly and then be able to outpace and outbid all of their other competitors. And then we have this notion of individuality at scale, or just the fact that homogeny doesn't rule. So typically in most briefs, like in a brief that gets created, they're all the same things, like who's the target? And what's the one essential thing that we want to say? And that approach was great, but now we can really start to look at discrete segments and discrete audiences. And there's an expectation by our customers to be able to talk to them in a much more personalized and a much more relevant way. But when you go back to like how mass advertising kind of started in the 50s and through up through really the 2000s, like we had these archetypes of what we were presenting back. Like marketers would either try to create pop culture or hold a mirror up to pop culture. And you know, most of us like sit in this, like, let's hold a mirror up because it's really hard to create pop culture. So in holding a mirror, it's just easy to create like one insight that goes across the entire audience, and then just like create archetypes like the Leave It to Beavers or Friends or whatever it might be, and then project ourselves out to the audiences. Well now it's like, if you think about you know, like tools like or platforms like Reddit, you know, if you have an interest, there is guaranteed to be a lot more people on Reddit who have that interest and are way more into it than you are. And that goes for anything. Think of anything that's like the weirdest, oddest fetish, and you'll be able to find that fetish on Reddit. And there'll be a lot of people who are actually into that stuff. And the crazy part is that what we really need to start to think about is how we can actually create content to meet people and be able to be relevant to them within all of our communications and talk to them in a way that they want to be talked to. But you know, it's hard to create content. So it was an interesting study where it was talking about what are the problems in creating content. So the number one problem in creating content is creating content. So it's a kind of a weird cyclical thing, but it's hard. Like it's hard. Like nobody's getting increased budgets or anything like that. But when you kind of go down, you start to get a bit more insight. Like scaling content is difficult, which I think is just creating more of it. Generating ideas. So you know, that's why agencies exist. Not everybody's a creative person and can come up with ideas.